Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
Rick, are we climbing a real wall of worry, or is this just hype?
Well, the wall of worry is really a Carnival Barker's device to make people who are thinking straight, who have at least some vestigial sanity, into thinking that maybe they got it wrong, that maybe they should be in the market too. But there are 1,000 good reasons to be out of the market right now, or to not exaggerate, probably a good 20. And so we always hear about the wall of worry and all the stupid people who stay out of it simply because there are all these discouraging facts out there. But you can see where the market is, it's totally taken leave of fact and reality. You know, it's been going up irrespective of earnings and horrific geopolitical news and pretty much everything else, which tells you that it's not so much climbing a wall of worry as taking advantage of cyclical forces, which will cause stocks to go up and down for no good reason.
What does that mean to the average person that, we have the Magnificent Seven holding up the stock market and the rest of it is just a pile of straw?
Geez, I hate that term, Magnificent Seven. You know, it's concocted by some headline writer.
Of course.
Who probably never got out of the fourth grade. And I guess they're trying to leverage a familiar movie title, but to call these stocks magnificent is really creepy, and to sort of limit the group to seven so that you can make it fit the movie title adds another note of ridiculous to it. So I call them the lunatic sector, not the Magnificent Seven. And when you see these stocks take incredible leaps on zero volume, you know, when a stock closes at 4 p.m. and then there's earnings news out after the close, and they take a 50-point leap, or even more than that, the other day in Facebook. Well, Facebook, by the way, set a record with that leap. It added $200 billion to the macro balance sheet, and I think supposedly made Zucker Schmuck $50 billion richer. And not a single share changed hands in that time between when it closed and when it shot up on the news. So that's how the wealth effect happens. And I've written about it in the current edition of Rick's Picks, rickackerman.com. But it's really just, it's air. It's not even, it doesn't even have the substance of to say that the rally is filled with gas kind of overstates it, because gas at least has volume. It's got their molecules there, but these gaps in stocks like Facebook that create all this quote unquote wealth, there's virtually nothing there.
Now in Canada here, Bell Media, which owns CTV, is selling off 45 of its 103 radio stations. They're announcing massive cuts to its television programming, which includes Bloomberg, which is business news. Are similar things happening in the U.S.?
They've been happening for decades, really. Nothing personal. I know you've been a media guy all your life working in various news media, But I can't see why anybody would listen to radio anymore. You know, I mean, other than Sirius XM. And even there, you'd think with all those channels, they'd have more stuff that you like. But if you're a jazz lover, for instance, they're what they call real jazz, is stuff you don't really want to listen to. So I don't, you know, with all the commercials, which of course raised the decibel level by 50% when a commercial, or maybe a good 20% when a commercial comes on, why do people listen to radio? So there's been a lot of markdowns in all news media, certainly, and many entertainment mediums. So it's been happening in the U.S. too.
And we're seeing massive layoffs as well from places like FedEx and Amazon for their truck drivers and delivery people. Is this the way recessions start? Companies say there's going to be a recession, so they anticipate it and actually cause it themselves with layoffs?
No, I mean, it's real. It's definitely masked by huge fiscal spending. You know, it's very hard to come to statistical recession when you got the government laying out $2.5 trillion more than anybody really has. So at the fiscal level, I guess you could say the economy is rip roaring, hiring people into, so to speak, the Department of Education or whatever. So government jobs are going gangbusters, but where the rubber meets the road, literally, the delivery fleets of Amazon and UPS, they're all laying off like crazy. And of course, there are even layoffs in the Silicon Valley now. Supposedly, you know, the big story of the last year about AI being the end-all and be-all has sort of mutated into the tech stocks have gotten hit because they're quote-unquote getting ready to shift into AI. So the AI story is going to be with us probably until it comes a cropper in the next recession.
Or the robots take over and we're eliminated.
Well, I'm just grateful that they'll never eliminate me. And I know you're supposed to never say never, but when I see some of the things that these bots churn out, that take verbal skills, sentences, things, ideas, you're only going to be replaced if you're an idiot.
Well, I can tell AI-generated text because it's dull. They have no passion. They quote a lot of statistics, but they don't tell you about why you would like a certain thing. They would say Taylor Swift. They know nothing about her charm or her grace and her generosity. I mean, don't forget, she gave all the truck drivers on her tour $100,000 bonuses, and she was generous with others as well. But they'll just cite statistics. She has sold so many albums. She's appeared before so many fans or has had so many hits. So you can tell AI stuff because it loves numbers, but it can't tell you anything that's about emotion.
Well, not just emotion. I know that when I've sort of plugged a question into an AI field looking for an interesting answer, it never produces one. That's true. It doesn't matter what you're asking it. And I think I would probably differ with AI about Taylor Swift. I'm not a fan of hers, but just ask AI, even in its most radically recently improved version, a good question, and it'll come up with an answer that could put you to sleep.
Yeah. And again, sports is about the emotion, and AI just does not capture that. A good sports writer really gets you into a team or a player's mind. AI-driven articles, again, just facts, and in some cases, made-up facts. We have a case here where a lawyer used AI-generated case precedents. As you know, in law, rulings in the past count a lot for what happens in the future. And in this case, AI just made them up about the Supreme Court approving certain, you know, moves in the civil courts that never happened. And now the lawyer who used it's in a lot of trouble.
You mentioned sports writing, and that's probably where the best writing in news has been over the last 100 years. You know, some of the sports writers, Red Smith, to name one of the greats, they write in their inimitable way that will never be captured by machines. But the trend, I think, is the other way. We could Zuckerberg has this idea that crawling the web and assembling data to produce stories is somehow going to attract readers. And because any kind of sports news, even local sports news, is very saleable, I think his web crawlers are going to be very active searching the web for, you know, everything from high school football stats to other things that simply don't get covered. Mm. And it's going to reveal kind of the impoverished language and imagination of AI when we start getting more sports stories, because you know, consolidating, let's say, regional sports is a very appealing idea. I think it could save newspapers, or it would be a good place to generate revenues for local papers that have fallen on hard times. So anyway, if we get more bots crawling the web and turning the sale of the house next to you for $620,000 into your above the fold headline on page one, that's kind of where we're headed.
Yes, well, I think in sports, they're just mining it for statistics for betting purposes. FanDuel has their own network.
Well, that's true. I mean, that's a big industry out there, sports betting, and I guess it creates a need for the kind of public relations you have in talking up sports in general.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, is there a big store of wealth waiting for everything to crash so it can swoop in and get stocks and bonds at a bargain?
Yeah, that's right in there with the wall of worry story. You know, all this money on the sidelines that's going to come streaming into the market at the first sign of trouble. Well, the fact is that money, it doesn't exist. You know, you can hear talk about, oh, there's $10 billion just sitting there waiting to come in, or $50 billion or whatever. But our money system has evolved so that we don't have that money. We create it in different ways of borrowing, you know, and that requires an expansive frame of mind. In other words, if you think everything's going to get more valuable tomorrow and whatever you invest in is going to grow, then you create this money of the mind. You borrow it into existence. So the fact is that if the market were to come down seriously, the supposed money on the sidelines wouldn't be there at all, because nobody would feel like borrowing to put it in the stock market. So the money on the sidelines is just an imagined creature that is there only when the market doesn't need it, when it's going crazy like it is these days.
Now, if that money isn't there, why is that myth being perpetrated?
Why is what being perpetrated?
Well, why are people saying there's this huge store of wealth that's just waiting for the next opportunity to pounce if it's not really there? Is this part of the strategy to get people to throw money into the market now?
Well, Wall Street is just a giant PR machine, but it's sort of modeled after the kind of PR that Carnival Barkers specialize in. It's just one big carnival midway. And so all news, all wisdom, so I put that word in heavy quotes, that emanates from Wall Street is just, it's just marketing, that's all. And there's no such thing as a negative story. It's almost like the real estate business. You know, they're always sort of looking for that ray of sunshine. But so you know, everything we hear is really just to promote the sale of stocks. And, of course, there's not, you know, over the course of centuries, when markets were bottoming out or when they came down, 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 it's almost an axiom that they will finally turn bearish at the very bottom. So everything you hear is wrong, and you really just have to use your common sense, which, as you know, we've been talking about, would be to look askance at the wall of worry right now. The alternative being jumping into the market hand over fist at its current heights.
Are statistics like the U.S. GDP growth as realistic as the statistics we get out of China?
Yeah, or Stalin's Russia, actually, yeah. Just with, of course, Walter Duranty to report them out. The statistics are really insulting, you know. Not that you can't extrapolate out a 3% GDP or headlines that say the economy is going so great guns that there's no way that the Fed's going to do the wrong thing. But, we have this, who knows? They produced the $330,000 jobs number the other day. And it's like, who knows? What were the expectations? Some were hoping for like 100,000 new jobs, presumably signaling that the economy is weak enough that the Fed has to start loosening again. But the figures are so manipulated. You can believe the part about we're not statistically in recession because we've got $2.5 trillion worth of fiscal stimulus working for the economy, and I don't mean that in a positive sense. You know, it's just creating a lot of government jobs and inflated transfer payments and a whole bunch of other things that are not exactly growing capital and using it most efficiently. So the statistics are whatever you want to believe.
Are there any big market calls that you're looking forward to?
Well, I've been pushing for months and months the idea that a price of 430 on Microsoft would signal the end of the end. And we're here. We're Microsoft is traded as high today, I think, as 415. And I get my target from a weekly chart that looks like it absolutely couldn't be wrong, at 430. Has to be the end of the show for Microsoft. So I had a subscriber say, well, now that it's here, what do you really think will happen? Well, a couple things we do know, that when someone puts out a number like that and drum rolls it and said this will be the end, he's just looking for trouble. You know, it's like he's bent down, grabbed his ankles. And so I am in that position, really. I've made a real spectacle of that target. And some would say, oh, he put his reputation on the line with what some might say is just a lot of blather about a Microsoft target. But it is there, and it is derived from a method that I trust. I don't trust my own judgment, certainly at important turning points in the market, but I do trust my charts, my technical work. So we've got this target. And so I have to sort of take a step outside of myself and say, well, how's Mr. Market gonna get me now that I've bent over and grabbed my ankles? And the answer, I think, is in a Microsoft, in an IBM chart from a long time ago. It was an IBM bull market that followed the general market of about 2 or 3 years. And in that instance, IBM for years made its way toward this target. I use ABCD patterns, and it was sort of making its way toward D for a long time. And it finally got within a few inches of it, and it started to come down. So I got very busy at that point, patting myself on the back. I had no time really to observe what was going on. Microsoft came down enough that I'm thinking, well, I guess I can breathe a sigh of relief. I hit it right on the nose. And, of course, I didn't notice when IBM started to turn. It came down moderately initially, but from exactly where I expected or just shy of that. And so I'm busy patting myself on the back. The stock turned around, and I didn't take notice really until it started to get up near the old highs. So it went to make one final high just an inch above the previous one. And of course, that second high was exactly at my target. And from that point, IBM fell. It was an avalanche. The stock tentatively came down a few days, ratcheted down. But from that point, you know, after it made the second top, it looked a lot like a chart of 1929. And the stock came down over the next 6 months vertically. I mean, it was just the most disastrous bear market you could imagine, just playing out on the chart. And what it tells me, or what it told me, is that that no market, no stock or index can come down that steeply unless virtually every bull and every bear is positioned wrong. All right. So, in other words, it literally got everybody. It got the bears because the short squeeze above the initial high made them cover their shorts, and it got the bulls because they're thinking, "Oh, it's broken out again." So literally everybody was trapped. And to me, it was so perfect that it would be a logical way for this market to end. With respect to Microsoft, it'll hit its 430 target. It'll come down a little bit for, you know, 20, 410, 45, 397. And ordinarily I think, well, I nailed it again. And then it's going to make one marginal new high to, in other words, scare the crap out of shorts so that they all cover in a big way, the very last of them. And it bulls just dive in again. So that's, it's a lot to sort of pack into a scenario. I mean, a lot of things have to happen just so, but to me, it's the most logical way for this bull market to end.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Jim. I really appreciate the chance to connect with your audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.